Coffee House Shots is sponsored by EDF, Britain's biggest generator of zero carbon electricity. Find out how we are busy helping Britain achieve net zero at www.edfenergy.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bulls. So today is the day that Wayne Cousins, the killer of Sarah Everard, has been sentenced. And in response to that, Harriet Harman, the Labour MP, has called for Cressida Dick to resign. James, what's been going on?
So Sarah Everard's killer was a police officer at the time of her murder. What has come out in the last few days is that he kind of conducted a kind of fake arrest of her, and that is what led to her getting into his car. And Harriet Harman's view is that the fact that someone who was a serving police officer has done this, and the fact that she thinks that various flags as to his behaviour were missed by the police, or it means that there is a breakdown in trust between women in London and their police force. And Harriet Harman believes that this can only begin to be resolved with fresh leadership for the Met. Now, Cressida Dick was recently given an extension to her term. I think it is fair to say that the government statement and the government briefing that accompanied that extension, I mean, so the Metropolitan Police Commissioner is a kind of mix of the Mayor of London and the Home Secretary in terms of the appointment, was not exactly enthusiastic. It was a kind of, well, there's nobody else, so Cressida Dick can stay for another 2 years. I think she's in a very difficult position now because the Metropolitan Police keep talking about him as an ex-police officer. Yes, he is now an ex-police officer, but at the time he committed this awful crime, he was a police officer and he used that role to do this. And I think the other concern that people have is he was a firearms police officer. So one assumes that the police were keeping a greater eye on his state of mind than they would be of an average police officer. So how were these things missed? How was an incident where he appears to have exposed himself? How was that not looked at properly? And so I think the question is, can the Metropolitan Police, under its current leadership, re-establish trust with women in London? I think it is a question. And at the moment, I don't think what the Metropolitan Police is saying is going to do that.
Katie, it's not the first time that Cressida Dick has been under pressure, not even this year. But she does seem to be a bit of a Teflon candidate, doesn't she? Despite her checkered record and people calling for her to go. As James says, she has been renewed in her tenure. So do you think this one is going to go anywhere?
Well, she's clearly under pressure. You have Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, saying she would continue to hold the police to account, but refusing to say whether Cressida Dick should resign. Now, that's different than not saying she should resign and saying she should stay in post. But clearly her tenure has been extended. And I think when it comes to whether or not she'll stay, I think if we think back to soon after Sarah Everard's death, when there was a vigil that actually turned into quite ugly scenes later in the evening, and the police were being accused of being too heavy-handed, which was seen as particularly off the mark and insensitive given what had happened to Sarah Everard, and there were calls for Cressida Dick to go then. Now, the government didn't move on that. I think that also is partly because lots of people on the other side were saying, well, actually, we don't think that, you know, a female senior police officer going is what's going to fix this, and it's important that she stays on. So I would imagine the fact that Cressida Dick is today in her, you know, when she's speaking today, not answering those questions, means that it's unlikely she will move, but her position is clearly under a lot of scrutiny right now.
And James, today is also the day that had been dreaded by many people, which is the end of the furlough scheme. It's always been thought of as a politically risky time, but do you think that now we're here, the government is actually handling this end of the furlough scheme better than we might have thought?
I don't know what you and Katie think, but I always thought that the run-up to the end of the furlough, there would be a drumbeat of people saying this needs to be extended, it needs to be extended. I've been struck by how little of that there has been. I think one of the reasons for that is there are huge numbers of vacancies in the economy. There are clearly labour shortages. So if you were going to end furlough and help, and obviously there's not a direct match between these vacancies and people on furlough, some of these vacancies require specialist skills such as, you know, HGV licences and the like. But it is clearly a much better time to end furlough than you might have expected, given the number of vacancies, given the amount of work available, and you know, starting salaries are now rising at their fastest rate since records began in 1997. So, and I think one of the other things which will make the end of furlough less dramatic than expected, and this is anecdotal at the moment, we don't have any firm numbers yet, but there does seem to be an impression that some firms in the travel industry, for example, which hasn't returned to normal post-COVID, because labour is so tight at the moment, they are choosing to keep on staff, more staff than they normally would, because the labour market is so tight. E.g., if these staff go and they find another job, finding people to replace them would be more difficult. So I think furlough ending is massively less controversial than you would have expected. And I think the other thing for the government is they've ended furlough at a time when we're not, I mean, as you said to us before this podcast began, yes, cases are going up a bit at the moment, but we're not at a point where people are talking about the likelihood of restrictions coming back at some point soon, which I think is the other thing that makes it less controversial that furlough is ending. And I think the way the government has structured the scheme also means, because you were having to pay something to keep these people on furlough, if you were certain you weren't keeping these people on, you probably would have let them go earlier in the cycle.
And Katie, Bloomberg today splashes with an announcement that the Chancellor is supposedly coming up with next week. You've written in the magazine this week about how Labour hasn't taken advantage of the cost of living crisis. So are the Conservatives going to take advantage of the crisis in terms of being seen as people who will solve it?
Yes, this is the UK's new £500 million winter hardship fund. And I think this feeds into concerns across government that it's going to be a very tricky few months. Yes, they may be far ahead in the polls, but ultimately, I think as the weeks go on, there are more and more factors, which means voters are going to feel the pinch. And I think those include, clearly, energy is one of them. I think, strangely enough, the fuel crisis isn't seen in government as, you know, the worst issue. I think that's seen as more of a short-term issue. You can see it in some of the comments. But the energy crisis, I think general supply chain shortages, which in one instance affected fuel, but I think heading up to Christmas in terms of supply of lots of goods people will want. And then inflation, something James has written about. I think that's something that is worrying. And then does that mean you have a rise in interest rates? If which so, that's going to be something everyone feels. And I think that all these factors, when you combine it also with the universal credit uplift, mean that there is a worry they all come together and create a perfect storm. So I think this hardship fund is about trying to address that. I think what's interesting is lots of Tory MPs speaking today are happy about it. They're relieved because they're worried about their constituents. But then there's also a group who are saying, well, where is our route back to, you know, fiscal conservatism? So it's more like, I would say, your usual suspects on this, people like Marcus Fish. But I think the government's in a place where they're clearly trying to soften the blows of a few difficult issues. But at the same time, with the government's talking about, you know, the tax rise from the NI and social care, there are questions about, you know, how wise all this spending is. But clearly worried enough that they have decided to try and soften it before lots of this stuff starts to happen. I think Labour on the other hand could say, well, with things like universal credit, you could just extend the uplift. You know, is this slightly through the back door?
And James, on the economy, you were mentioning earlier this week in the office about this underreported story this week of what Andrew Bailey, the Governor of Bank of England, has been saying. Can you tell us what he's been saying? Because it has been underreported.
Two interesting interventions, one yesterday and one on Monday. On Monday night, he gave a speech basically warning of hard yards ahead in the economy, saying that the Bank of England have its network of agents who kind of assess what's going on in the economy around the country. It makes them sound like kind of undercover.
Very Bond-esque.
They do not feature in the latest James Bond film. But they are warning him that the supply and labour shortages are getting worse, not better. And he was sounding quite pessimistic about the economy, saying that the recovery is already weakening and fretting about whether you're in a situation where you'd want to raise interest rates because of inflation, but the economy being too weak to support it. And then yesterday, at a European Central Bank discussion of central bankers, he was saying he's pushed back by 2 months when he thinks that it's likely that the UK economy will recover to its pre-COVID size because of these supply chain shortages. But I think you can see his mood on Monday night. He kind of asked, you know, when are the locusts turning up? And I think this does sum up that there are just a lot of, as to borrow Katie's metaphor, you know, it's perfect storm. Because COVID was a very funny thing, right? COVID was both a supply and a demand shock, right? And demand has come back faster than supply, but there are now kind of getting to be kind of real supply issues. In the UK argument, this all gets turned into a debate about, is it Brexit, is it not Brexit? Brexit is obviously a factor involved, but one of the things that makes it more complicated is it's not the only factor. If Brexit was the only factor, you open up, you could just, you know, offer those 5,000 visa slots for HGV drivers would get filled very, very quickly, and there'd be no problem. I think that is less certain they will get filled very quickly right now, because although it is not as acute as it is here in some other places, there is a general shortage of HGV drivers across Europe. And I think one of the things that you hear from people is, are people really going to come for a three-month visa? Is it going to have to be a bit longer? You know, and I think it's also true that the UK haulage firms have to pay a premium to attract staff. And so I think this is one of the things that makes this complicated is you're seeing this everywhere. If you look at, but this doesn't make it better for the UK. It makes it worse, right? If you look at the energy issues, you look at the way that gas prices are shooting up across Europe. You look at the fact that China has got not issues about not having enough energy. Asia is massively driving up the gas price in global terms. So all of these things are coming together. And I think this could make for a very choppy autumn for the government. But I should say this, right? And things that, you know, it's always worth noting things that you thought. I think if anyone had said to us, sorry, I know I'm going on for ages. No, I think if anyone had said to us a few weeks ago, the country is going to run out of fuel. You know, that what was at one point it was, you know, between 50% and 87% of petrol stations were out of petrol. I think we probably all would have thought that the government would take a big hit from that. What seems bizarre is that the government doesn't seem to be paying a political price for it. You know, poll out today shows Tory poll numbers solid and the lead actually going up by a point. And I think most of us would not have thought that would happen. You know, we all remember 2000 when, you know, even at the nadir of Tory fortunes, they went ahead of Tony Blair's Labour Party when the petrol pumps run dry. So I think that, you know, yes, I think the autumn will be very hard, but I think the reaction to this week makes me more cautious about drawing a direct political extrapolation from that. And sorry, apologies for the world's longest ever answer.
That's all right, James. And if you want to hear more from James Forsyth and Katie Bowles and Isabel and Fraser, on Monday we will all be at Conservative Party conference. So if you're there at conference, you can come check out Coffee House Shots Live, hosted by The Spectator. We'll have a live audience to talk through all of these issues and more for an hour or so. We'll take questions for the audience as well. So if you want to, you know, heckle James or ask about Katie's.
James, do you want to be heckled?
I think I would have to prepare some kind of Keir Starmer style instant rebuttals for heckles. The big question there is, Katie reveals in the magazine this week that she has been stockpiling Iron Brew. And the big question is are you bringing your Iron Brew supplies to Manchester or not?
Well, I don't have to share my Iron Brew.
No, exactly.
So I'm, like, it's like when I have to bring two lunches to the office for fear that you or Fraser's going to eat my food. I think I'd be worried about carrying around such a delicious nectar in such a busy event.
So is that why we're serving gin and tonic rather than Iron Brew?
Yeah, I have been known to get an Iron Brew for breakfast at conference though, but I will pick it up now and hope for the best.
Gosh, Katie. So yeah, we will have gin and tonic as well. And lots more great content, as you've just heard. So if you're at a conference, check us out.
I can actually see on his desk Fraser's red Spectator apron, which is obviously in preparation to travel with him to Manchester.
Exactly. So if you'd like to have Fraser Nelson handing you a gin and tonic at conference and you're there, then do come see us. You can find out more details in the conference pamphlet. But if you can't make it, you've got better things to do than Conservative Party conference, then you'll be able to hear the podcast later in the day when we put it out as a normal episode. So thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow.